welcome to the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. That's right. We've got a warrior on the show tonight. And if you are an etheric being on the lower astral plane or you're a ghoul and you're coming up to mess around, you better not hope you run into our next guest because she's going to hand your ass to you and you're going right back to the hell you came from. How's that for an intro? We're going to bring on the show tonight Ms. Yona Brindis. My goodness, she's an incredible energy healer, great teacher. She is a tsunami of unconditional love, a sea of unconditional love. You better have a life jacket or you're going to drown in that unconditional love. I have no idea what I just said, but on paper, it looked pretty cool. Ms. Yona Brindis is an incredible teacher, very advanced. Her and Mr. Jeff Casper have been on our show several times. It's a great, great honor to have them. They offer a lot of very unique teachings and advancements for the soul. I mean, if you're really committed to growing your spirit and advancing your evolution, Jeff and Ms. Yona Brindis are incredible teachers to help you do that. Let us begin tonight's program.
Joining us now is Ms. Yona Brindis, energy coach, energy healer. You've heard her on the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show several times. She's one of our most prolific and greatest guests. You'll learn more about Ms. Yona Brindis by going to her website at transcos.com. Ms. Brindis, welcome to the program. Great honor to have you with us.
Hey, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You.
I always love it.
Thanks.
You ask the best questions.
Well, geez, now the bar is raised too high. I can only go downhill from here.
Okay, you asked me if I to say stop if you, in case you ask a question that is uncomfortable for me, and I said no problem. Okay, so now I got it. stick to it. So go ahead. Throw it.
Stakes are in. Most of the time, Yona, we have you on Mr. Jeff Casper talking about energy healing, but now we really want to explore your life. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could take us back to your life in the beginning. When did you become really aware or sensitive to spirituality? When did you have your spiritual awakening?
Well, of course, this is a very complex question, you know, because we all have a different definition of spirituality. Like, for instance, I wasn't really raised in a religious way. So for me, to identify that I actually had spiritual experiences took me quite a while to realize that this was a spiritual experience. But the experiences that I had that made me sort of become aware that there's something weird about me or the way I perceive things were mostly in the dreams and the visions I had as a very young child. And for the most part, I was having like very horrific, very violent dreams. I had a literal fear to close my eyes. Like as soon as I closed my eyes, I'd see, you know, like I don't even want to describe them. And that led to insomnia. Like I was afraid to sleep when I was
so
a kid.
You would see these, I mean, would you call them, is it safe to, if people want to give a visual description, would you call them the ghouls, demonic entities, dark beings?
Very. Okay. And at that point, I was, like I said, I didn't even have a religious background. So for me, these things had no meaning, you know, other than just being scary. You know, it wasn't like I identified it as this or that. It was just something that I was really, really afraid of, and I tried to avoid that, and I couldn't talk to anyone about it. So what happened to me is what happened to a lot of people when they were discovering or feeling their energetic perceptivity, is that I just shut it down altogether, or I just didn't go into any deeper states, which means I literally refused to sleep. Later, I realized that this, you know, was just sort of an active third eye, you know, like a strong perception. It wasn't so much that I felt like I had clairvoyance, like premonitions, but it was more like I felt really deeply connected to what other people see, what they have experienced in the past. Kind of like in the movies, you know, when you touch someone and you're like, get all these things. So that was kind of like my issue, that I was feeling a person's or seeing a person's life story or that of a place. And so that to me, from today's perspective, I would probably call that sort of the beginning of a, well, what we consider to be spiritual today, a real sort of experience with my inner divinity, that I didn't have until I was right around 13. I was very suicidal at the time, like between 13 and 18. And
were you suicidal because of your sensitivity and because you were having a hard time processing the information or the feelings or the visions?
Probably. There was a lot of guilt. There was a lot of things that I just couldn't process, and I thought I was like a lost soul, like a damned soul, like without even all this, you know, programming of you know, a sinner or anything like this. I didn't even know why. I just felt like there was no point for me to live. There's no way I could ever sort of become a good person, like make up for these things that I had no recollection or awareness of what they, you know, why they would sort of torment me. And
you know what,
and there I had a real sort of hands-on spiritual experience with my inner light. And with, you know, my what I would call inner divine part of me speaking to me and literally giving me words of encouragement, of hope.
Right. As these dark beings are going after you,
mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know why darkness or evil, if you would perceive it to be that, would have any interest in attacking an innocence of a child, and how would that dark, dense vibration be able to even, you know, attend to even communicate with a child who I would think that would be oscillating in a high vibration because they haven't necessarily been tarnished or been dealt fully with the programming of this reality. So how is it possible that those dark entities would be able to attack you or come after you? And also, did you ever get a sense that those dark beings were a direct carryover from a previous lifetime that you'd just come out of? That it was a carryover of the energies from a previous lifetime or lifetimes?
That's a good question. The whole idea of karma or past life came, of course, much later into my awareness. I think the main part of your question here, why would sort of dark energies be interested in or why would they attack someone who, you know, really, you know, isn't doing anything, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what most of your listeners probably have.
Yep.
You know, I think...
What could you possibly do to provoke them?
I know. I mean... I'll tell you the truth, I found out later that some of the things that I saw weren't really necessarily dark at all. So I was able to decode all that a little more, or a little better. But, my overall understanding, of course, is that where there's perception, you know, you basically see things that are always there. Just because you see them doesn't mean they're not there. So just because most people don't see them doesn't mean they're not there. All right. So, for the most part, I think they're always there, you know, and some people just perceive them more clearly. The other thing, you know, like germs, you know, they're always around us, you know.
Yeah.
Before we had microscopes, we didn't know they were there, but they, you know. So that's my understanding today. Part also is, of course, something that a very early teacher of mine told me. She said, you know, where there's light, there's shadow, you know. So wherever there's light, there's a sort of an attraction there sort of darker energies to latch on, if you will. Of course, I see this more differentiated today as well. But that explains to me why people who are in the sort of innocent state where they can't really deal with those experiences and those perceptions, why they feel so tormented. This changes when a person learns how to make a stand, how to deal with those experiences, how to manage your own energies. So, but the biggest thing I found out, Ryan, and I think this is good to hear for everybody else, because here in energy coaching, I see this all the time, this shift in people when they begin to understand that, is that as long as we're afraid, the fear is feeding it. So as long as we're afraid.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry, I've got to pause you for just 1 second. I'm hearing kind of a swishing noise in the background or a rubbing noise.
Okay.
I don't know what that, think like that.
My end?
Yeah, that noise, whatever that is.
Hang on. Let me.
That noise that you just made a second ago, it's what I'm hearing in the background. I'm sorry.
Do you still hear it right now?
No, I don't hear it anymore. All right, okay. So we want to just start from the top of that answer.
Okay, I can go back to that answer.
Yep, perfect. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure it comes out. I don't want to have to tell you about it at the beginning. Okay, so we'll do a countdown with a 3, 2, 1.
So as long as there's fear, then a person becomes more susceptible and less protected. And therefore, you know, it's often those of us, you know, who do not know yet how to deal with that, or who are too afraid to face it, who become very susceptible to it. Now, the fear can come through religious programming, can come through, you know, watching too many horror movies, can come through things that we sort of mentally absorb over a lifetime. So some people can really get stuck in that fear. But the main thing I found out is that some of these visions that I had that looked horrific to me, that those were parts of my energy really warding those darker energies off. And so I also had to get to that place where I accepted that I have parts in me that can be vicious, you know, literally. I mean, I've seen myself decapitating people.
Jeez.
You know, like all these, like, I mean, gosh, I was a little girl, you know, I mean.
And so you're seeing visions of yourself decapitating people?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Most of the visions I had was fighting, battling, you know, sloshing. You know, and that, of course, had nothing to do with my, you know, with this lifetime. You did ask me, you know, if I did come to the conclusion that there's a connection with past lives, and I agree that there probably is. I do not really recommend people to spend too much energy, too much time on dealing with their past lives, you know, because we're really here to live this life. Even though some of us have some karmic debt or some karmic aspects that need to be undone. But what can make sense for a person, and what did make sense, a lot of sense for me, is to look into just sort of the lineage, the karmic lineage that a person has. You know, like I was born in Iceland, you know, with a Viking heritage, and I saw myself doing, you know, basically killing, raiding, raping. and so when I started to see the link there, then all that made a lot more sense to me. And it was easier for me to make peace and to accept that there are parts in me that that do not necessarily have anything to do with this lifetime, but that's a load that I carry through my ancestry. And I've accepted that. And as soon as we accept some of these darker aspects of ourselves, whether they're linked to actual things that we did in this life or things that we've inherited, some of that fear goes away. So the ability to contextualize some of that really helps. So for anyone who has similar experiences, like really sort of scary, horrific things all the time, the best thing a person can do is to educate themselves about, you know, some of their own lineage, some of their you know, how energy moves, to get to know their own energy and to get to know their own ego. Because that's real healing. As soon as we face our own darkness, the fear of outer darkness becomes secondary. It's almost like it becomes our shield, our protection. If that makes sense.
So you're saying that by you embracing the dark or processing your shadow, that the shadow aspects about you are, theoretically speaking, going to protect you from maybe any perceived external darkness that would be coming off another individual. Maybe it would be your, you know, a present or residual energy that's trying to infiltrate you.
Well, yeah, because the fear of our own darkness, so to speak, or the denial, not willing to accept that, is what creates sort of an electricity. It creates a charge in our energy field that attracts all kinds of, I call them shit magnets, you know, that
shit.
It attracts all kinds of things into our lives, be it karmic or not, it doesn't matter. So if we want to really connect with our inner higher power, if we really want to connect with who we truly are, then we have to learn to surrender to some of these parts that we don't necessarily like at first. So it's the shadow work part, you know, is an important part, or should be an important part in every journey, because it helps to minimize that fear of these things that we cannot love about ourselves. And the way this turns into our protection is that it strengthens our energy in that way, that we know who we are. It's like, you know, when you lie all the time or when you pretend all the time, you know, you become really insecure, you know, that people find out about you. So, you know, that makes your energy weak. But if you're true to yourself, and if you know where your center is, then by accepting, by surrendering all these things that you can't love about yourself, then you become naturally stronger.
Okay, Yona, I want to give you a visual example of something. Say, for example, you have the sun, and a person, and the sun would be considered the source, which is God, if you want to call it, the end-all, be-all conscious being, apparently, that we're all a part of. So we're all connected to that sun. And an individual spirit that we perceive is a marble. Now, when you say that you saw parts of your previous lifetimes doing these realistic things, and you were experiencing pain and suffering, how do you say with certainty that those actions were attributed directly to the evolution of, say, for example, your individual marble or that individual particle going through evolutions, and that was not directly attributable to another marble within that source, coming from the source? When you say we're processing shadow, or you're processing your own shadow, at what point do you discern what is your individual particle's evolution compared to what is an experience or a shadow aspect of the entire being which comes from source?
There is, of course, several layers of karma, or several layers of evolution of the consciousness. And there is also something that is sort of collectively that needs to be transcended, all right? And we all carry those parts in us. I'm sure, you know, your listeners understand that when I talk about holographic information, like the universe is based on, is a big hologram, which means every part carries the information of the whole, all right? So as a collective, humans, the human race, we all have a evolutionary path that we need to go through, and that translates into in parts into our personal karma, into our personal liberation process. So the answer to your question then is that there is a direct connection between both. So if I learn how to liberate myself, if I learn how to fine tune my own source, I am actually helping or supporting for the entire collective evolution to do the same thing. It's like ripping a hole or reprogramming the entire matrix. So there's a matrix within me, and then there is a matrix that I belong to on several levels of matrix that I belong to. And if I connect with my own source and begin to liberate myself from all these things, you know, that I, the me, carried into this life, then I'm helping the entire collective to do so, and vice versa. But it is the individual that is carrying sort of this new liberated energy into the collective, and then that changes the development of humanity. So I think there's an overall tendency for us right now, you know, as far as like global awakening and so forth is concerned, that there's a, you know, because we observe that there's a lot of people awakening, sort of spontaneously awakening right now. So there must be, and I'm just inferring that there must be an overall collective tendency right now to transcending some of our karma, which then on the other end, of course, induces things like global collective shadow to come forward, which is what many interpret as what we are experiencing right now.
So when you look at global collective shadow, and if you were going to say that, okay, well, you know, there are a lot of dark things that are happening in the world, they're coming out because the shadow's coming out. If you look at the history of humanity, it seems that humanity is always doing dark things. I mean, yeah, sure. Sure, there's some nice things. Look, you know, you do a couple spots where humanity isn't barbaric, but it seems to be a lot of dark things that are happening. If we are infinite beings, we reincarnate, we have an infinite number of lifetimes and tries, where does it end? If the shadow is coming out, isn't this a perpetual cycle that's going to continue to repeat itself over and over again? At what point do we, does humanity as a species, evolve beyond experiencing the pain and suffering, or regurgitating or physically manifesting this pain and suffering as part of a shadow? Where does the shadow get cleared?
We can see this very clearly. There's a threshold. There's a threshold. So on a personal level, for instance, when a person steps out of the collective and sort of takes his or her own karma into his own hands, then there is no dependency anymore. Then you begin to really expand your energy beyond, which in sort of esoteric language could maybe be called as sort of logging into the divine field. All right, then there is no limitation there. Humanity as such, over the history, at least the recorded history, or like the one that we have available, has gradually increased the consciousness level. And it's actually at a point right now where it's almost like flipping back and forth. It's right at that threshold where we're actually in a situation that we can evolve past the global shadow. The shadow is always sort of linked to karma. So when we as a collective manage to step over this threshold, then we can manifest a whole new reality here. And a lot of people talk about, you know, sort of a split here, that, you know, some people regress and some people progress. And there is a truth in that, because a few people can really carry a whole collective. But overall, the collective is at this threshold right now that so many people talk about. I just don't want to make it too special, because it still is in the hand of each individual to take self-responsibility. So it is really, from my point of view, is really just a matter of reaching a critical mass.
Okay,
one pearl at a time, so to speak.
Yeah. As far as this evolution goes, I want to just see if we can compare this evolution jump to that of an animal. Because if you look at animals, you look at horses, you look at pigs, you look at other things. I mean, you can see that animals have adapted to their environment. I guess they've adapted to the surrounding areas over a number of centuries. But you don't see a pig one day evolving to a point where it can operate machinery, or it can think of intelligent terms that we would think of at comparable human level, despite the fact that pigs are very intelligent. Do you think that human beings will ultimately suffer the same ceiling where we can only evolve so much because of our physical body structure, because of our brain structure, because of centuries of, let's say, pre-programmed messages that are always going to keep humanity at one level? Do you think that humanity is going to be stuck there? And I ask you that because if humanity is capable of making an evolutionary jump and evolving beyond this, why haven't other species on the planet that seem to not be preoccupied with the same crap that humanity is occupied with, why haven't they been able to make that big jump evolutionary-wise?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to answer the question about the physical limitations. There is a physical limitation in us humans right now to hold, to maintain these higher vibrational frequencies that we need to evolve into. So that is kind of like the threshold that we're at, which is why so many people are experiencing these unexplainable, in quotation marks, ascension symptoms. All right, so there is a structural reprogramming going on in our cells. I can see that in people. The comparison with other species on the planet, like animals, can be a bit misleading because animals do have a collective, like a group soul, if you want. And it's only those animals, like, say, our pets, that live in very close proximity to humans and the human consciousness that can evolve out of their collective karma. So animals, for the most part, even though, you know, they just are what they are, but they don't really have a shadow, you know, they just, you know, a tiger doesn't have a shadow because it eats a zebra, you know, hunts a zebra, you know, that's just who the tiger is. That's part of its karma group, so to speak. There is no need to evolve out of that because it is perfect the way it is. As for humans who came into this incarnation with the ability to transcend the collective karma, there is this spontaneous emergence of awareness, of consciousness, of higher vibrational existence when a person is ready for it. So the simple answer to the question is the reason why humans do it is because they can.
Okay.
Or they could if they wanted to.
All right. I want to let you know, I think you're probably aware of this, and I'm sure people are listening aware of it. I'm a passionate supporter of animal rights. I love animals. I actually prefer animals over humans. And I really disdain the way human beings just torture and kill and needlessly slaughter animals for consumption. I just think it's just disgusting. And I'm curious, I'm always wondering if humanity will experience something within the foreseeable future where they are no longer the supreme rulers of the planet, where there's going to be another biological creature that comes on and actually preys upon humans and actually balances things out. I wonder if humanity is setting itself up for a prolonged karmic event in the future where they will be, you know, preyed upon the same way humanity preys upon the other animals of the earth.
Well, this depends on how you look at it, all right? The fact that humans are exploiting nature, say,
yep.
That we're eating animals, that we're eating plants, that is only negative from a dualistic point of view.
Okay.
From a non-dualistic point of view, where it just is, you know, where you just assume that the collective karma of animals is, you know, some species of animals to agree to becoming food to other species, that the collective karma of plants is to be of service to the other species on this planet, then it isn't so much a negative thing, really. What you're referring to is the inhumane, you know, the non-integrous way, you know, that humans exploit this for consumerism and personal gain. So that's a reflection of where humanity is caught in dualism, in, you know, personal gain. If a humanity actually surpasses that threshold out of dualism, and that is not an issue anymore. I mean, you know this.
Hey, you know, I'm so sorry to tell you, but I think you're fading out right now.
Oh, okay. I don't know if it's the microphone that I'm using. I'm using a different microphone today.
Okay. If you want to start right at that last part. I mean, it was only after 10 seconds ago. That's when it's just starting to come out. Okay, we'll do a countdown. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
3, 2, 1.
So you know this for yourself, you know, that there are people who have developed or have worked on their consciousness, and there's a natural tendency to not wanting to support the way animals are being treated, the way, you know, becoming vegetarians or vegans. Most people that I know that have a fairly high consciousness level refrain from eating animals, but not so much due to mental reasons or because there's just an inner aversion to anything that is not integrous, that is not based on love, not based on synergy. And so the way we're looking at it from different perspectives here, we're looking at, you know, is it okay for an animal to be eaten in general, or is it okay the way the industry is treating animals? And here we see a huge discrepancy. The way we treat the planet, the way we treat animals is the problem. But that's just a result or the consequence of us humans not being evolved enough yet. As soon as this inner emergence of truth occurs in a person, certain things are just not possible anymore. So I'm not really afraid of that. I mean, you know, anything that is bound to ego, anything that is bound to dualism has a self-destruct code in it. So to a degree, you know, I agree with you, you know, like, yes, if we don't evolve out of this, we're going to be doomed to a degree, you know. But not to sound like all positive or something, you know, with everything that I see, I have a lot of reason to believe that there is still a lot of work ahead of us. But humans have that ability. And, you know, I have the privilege to work with people who choose to work on that, who choose to listen to their inner prompting and their inner truth. And there are so many people in this world who have that potential. And it's for me personally, it's so hopeful to be able to work with these people and see them evolve. I know it's possible, and I believe in that.
Okay, Ms. Yona, Brindis. Yeah, Yona, I wanted to ask you, what happened during the course of your life when you met Mr. Jeff Casper? How did meeting him really change your life, and how did that increase your ability to, I guess, grow spiritually?
There's several layers again to that, of course, looking at the circumstances under which we met and so forth. But I think the answer is pretty simple. It's when you live with someone, when you share a life with someone who shares the same way of seeing life, the world, and others, it makes it a lot easier. So one of the big shifts in my life when entering the life with Jeff was that here I was with someone whom I could talk to, you know, who saw things the same way, especially in regards to our energetic perception. But I think the biggest difference this made in my life is that it forced me to really transcend the last parts of my own dualism, the last parts of my ego, of issues that I still had with masculinity, and to really see Jeff as a soul, as a true self on his own journey, and that it really was just a bonus that we just happened to meet. And then to observe what happened when two people are on this kind of journey together, the synergy that comes out of that, and sort of the sum becomes more, or the whole becomes more than the sum of the two parts. So the things that we've developed together here as energy healers, and the things that come out of every time when we work together, is so much more than if just me or him individually. So I think that's something beyond, you know, just sort of the romantic love aspect and having a child together and so forth, that adds to the quality of a relationship, is when there is a spiritual purpose there, when you can see that there is more than just sort of meeting Mr. Right or wanting to be together forever. It transcends sort of the ego aspect of romantic love, and so there's a whole new level of unconditionality that I was able to experience through that, which is also what I teach today.
Okay. Ms. Brindis, I want to tell you that there's a difference between you and my wife have something in common. When I met my wife, I was totally ruined for talking to other women because there was no one else who could pair it to her. Now, and when I talk to you and I talk to Jeff, it's as if like I couldn't really, and I have a hard time talking to people who are like saying, oh, you know, I see something in your aura, and they're just giving you the basic information. So there's a major change in this. But what I wanted to ask you is the acceleration for your teachings, the things that you've learned. Do you feel that the work that you are doing, do you feel that you are reconnecting with an ancient wisdom that humanity once held? Or do you feel that the work that you are doing is kind of on the cutting edge of the evolution? Because I feel that when I read your work and we do these interviews, I always feel that you guys are always kind of opening up new doors or pushing forward doors that have been opened, but taking it to the next level. So I'm curious to know if you feel that you are reconnecting or kind of pushing the envelope as far as the evolution.
Quite frankly, I'm not sure if ancient knowledge is the right word. The way I see it is, it's a knowing that you know, sort of from a holographic point of view, is accessible to all of us. When I work, Ryan, it is not me, you know, the me that works. It is a part of me that has access to this knowing, and that is always there. All right. So, the first answer the answer to your first question is yes, that is what I'm accessing.
Okay.
The second question is, if we push it, definitely. I mean, Jeff and I both have a scientific background. We both have done extensive research. And there is a part of me, of course, that also wants to really develop something that becomes sort of a new technology. Whatever I have done in my life has always been on that level. I've always been involved in things that, you know, sort of 10, 20 years before they became mainstream. So that is sort of my personality. That's an ego part of me that comes in there, where I'm really interested in this. Like, besides, you know, sort of tapping into my knowingness, there's a part of me that also wants to, you know, like, I don't know, I guess prove to the world that it's real. This is real. And I teach people how to do the same thing. I duplicate myself over and over again. Or not myself, but you know what I mean, right? My abilities. I duplicate them over and over again. I don't think they're special. I think everybody can do this. And I think that this is where we all need to go. At least those who feel prompted to go there.
Will you look at somebody who has a greater awareness of spirituality, greater awareness of their infinite self. Do you think that is a telltale sign of a soul that is on one of its last lifetimes as a human being? Because if you look at the foundation of what a human being is, I mean, you're basically an animal. You experience a lot of things in the physical. A lot of things, times, you're bound by the physical body. And if you look at the previous evolutions of humanity, it seems a lot of people probably were not aware of the idea of a higher self, or did not see themselves as part of one collective human, one collective being. So do you find that people who are taking a very passion to this could be spirits, or likely spirits, to be on the way out to the next evolution?
Well, here there's a judgment in this question, and that is that it's a bad thing to incarnate. You know, and I understand this is a very common understanding of karma, that it's solely tied to karmic debt, or to an undoing of some sorts. But not all souls come here because they have karmic debt. Not all souls are here because they need to, you know, go through the karmic wheel over and over again, and they just look, they're just waiting for absolution or for relief of that. Some souls also come here to be of service at certain times, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, to be here. But I know where you're coming from with this question, and the way I see it is that someone who does have this prompting, like myself, I mean, I have these thoughts about sort of relativity, and you know, I remember when I was 6 years old, I was experiencing timelessness, and
it's incredible.
You know, it's just,
and most people are playing with Barbies at 6 years old. What's Yona doing? Ah, I'm experiencing timelessness.
You know, I was doing experiments with my sister where I had to stand next to me with a stopwatch, and like, you know, I don't want to go deeper into this because this is not something I recommend doing. But
I'm curious. Wait, what did you do? How did you experience timelessness?
I do not recall how this came about, but I somehow found out that I can make myself faint. And when I made myself faint, or when I fainted, I had these like really lucid experiences. And I thought this was so interesting. And so I had my sister stand next to me, because when I was in these states, which of course I do not recommend repeating that, I literally had visions of entire lifetimes. And I had my sister stop it, the watch, because I wanted to know how long I was actually gone for. And when I woke up, it was like 1 or 2 seconds. And that was like sort of the first experience that I can remember, where I realized that my perception of time is completely subjective, and that it has nothing to do with that it's not a constant. So that I can experience an entire lifetime in 2 seconds. And that's that followed me around quite a while. And whenever it came to like physics, because I was in college for a long time, you know, whenever I came to it, I had a really clear understanding of that. I knew what that felt like. And so I think it's the reason why I have no problems with wrapping my mind around retrocausality and entanglement and so forth, because I know what that feels like in me. Today I try to explain that to people, but I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing to be here, you know. I think that our job is kind of like to make the best of it. And those who have that prompting to evolve spiritually, you know, to evolve their consciousness, to connect with that inner higher power and really tap into source, I think they do this either because they can, or because it serves a certain purpose, even if it's just becoming a role model or a beacon of light for somebody else.
If a person complains about their complaints and say, you know, life sucks, and why am I here? And they get all upset because, you know, some people have a legitimate gripes. I mean, who knows what they came in for, and they said, you know what my higher self says? Hey, you know, we're going to come experience all these wonderful things, and we're going to be abused and all this stuff, and it's going to be great, you know, because your higher self just doesn't have the human perception. Yeah, you come and you experience it, and you're like, oh, God, your life's like, will you say that? Are you insulting and kind of causing blasphemy to your higher self and your greater evolution? Is that in one way, shape, or form, are you kind of tarnishing and diminishing your power?
Begin the presentation. Press the start broadcast button on the GoToWebinar control panel.
You can hear,
hear a webinar thing.
All attendees
yeah, I can hear it.
This system will notify you once you begin your broadcast.
Sorry. Oh, it's okay.
Okay, you're going to have to rephrase your question.
GoToMeeting's like, ask a definite question.
Well, I'm being logged into the webinar that is starting now, so like I'm holding it, so they have to wait.
Oh, geez.
That's okay. Your last question was really cool, but I think you have to repeat it now.
Sure. Miss Yona. Oh, sorry, Miss Brindis. There are some people who curse their existence and say, life sucks. Life really sucks. And may have something to do with the fact that when they were their higher selves, they decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to have a lifetime where we're experiencing physical reality where I'm abused and I'm an orphan and all these horrible things are going to happen to me. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be great. It's going to be good for my evolution. Yet you get here as a human being and you are that human being conscious. You realize full well, oh, my goodness, my higher self was obviously taking PCP when it decided to give me this, great life. I'm curious to know, if you curse your evolution and you say, life sucks, and even if you attempt to take your life, are you tarnishing or are you causing blasphemy to your spiritual goal? And also, if you're saying that life sucks and you're not happy to be here, are you actually diminishing your capability of physically manifesting happiness and joy?
Yeah, definitely yes to the latter. But this is a serious thing because it is very, very difficult to contextualize those negative experiences for most of us. So it does take a little bit of work to tune yourself into that place where you can begin to see purpose in suffering and purpose in pain. That does require a spiritual alignment. We cannot, with our mind or our emotion, get past that. And so I understand, when someone says that, because on that level of just sort of really wrapping your mind around why did I have to endure so much pain, or why do I still have to endure so much pain, is not possible. So a spiritual evolution then happens when we allow this higher power part to become the observer of our experience, so that we become the observer and the experiencer and the witnesser at the same time, and then that allows us to contextualize things. This is some of the questions you ask, Ryan. They're really cool, but there's two different answers to them depending on where a person is at. See, when I'm in pain, when I'm caught in my mind and my emotions, there's no way to solve pain. There's no way to not get angry or frustrated or helpless about pain. But when when I'm able to connect with my higher power, when I'm able to connect with that part of me that can be the observer and the experiencer at the same time, I begin to see different things. But it's like trying to explain what it's like to have kids to someone who doesn't have kids. We cannot see this until we embrace that spiritual alignment into our lives. So someone who does not believe in a higher power will probably not be able to manifest a life that can give a higher purpose or a higher, a context to the pain that the person, the suffering the person is experiencing. And this is why all these these techniques or these traditions that come through religions or spiritual teachings are all based on bypassing the mind. They're all based on silencing the mind, silencing emotions and the ego, so that we can access that part in us that can see the larger context.
Okay. Ms. Prentice, when you, Mr. Casra, do your remote healings and you really work with people, is there something common that you notice about people who are getting the healings done for the very first time? Are there certain qualities and shadow aspects that you find a lot of people are currently carrying? And there's a second part to that question, is when you often do your remote healings for the very first time, what are some of the immediate things that a person will notice about themselves that you commonly hear?
You mean what they experience themselves about themselves?
You, what they experience themselves, but also when, because you visually, I just want to remind, give people a quick background. There, Yona and Jeff are able to visually see the codes of a soul the same way scientists look at DNA. So if you look at DNA, you can actually see it structure by structure. And apparently they're able to look at the soul structure by structure and look at it, see what aspects of it, I guess, are having light or darker. You know, unresolved matters. When you're looking at this soul, visually speaking, what are you noticing are some of the common things that a person will have who get your healing done for the first time? Is it varies? It's too much of a variable.
It's very individual, of course, but you're right. There are certain things that we see sort of as patterns, like maybe not in the same order, but there are certain things that everybody kind of has to go through. As far as like the subjective experience of remote energy sessions is concerned, the most common experience is that people begin to be able to feel themselves, to feel their heart. And that in itself, you know, Ryan, is a huge one, because most of us are so disconnected from ourselves without even knowing it, that a lot of the sufferings or the things that we experience, maybe physically or in our relationships, or so that we perceive as negative, they're just sort of the consequence of not really being connected with ourselves, not really knowing who we truly are. So one of the most common experiences is that people begin to feel themselves. And then is, of course, a learning process there, the discernment between feelings, emotions, sensations. That is probably sort of the first big shocker for people, is that they begin to feel all these different things that they've never even sort of thought about. And then they will experience the limitations of their own mind. They will begin to experience their own thinkingness and how vicious their own mind is. Critical inner voice and so forth. So these are all things of or signs of a person's consciousness evolving, of their sort of energetic, their vibrational rate rising as they begin to see more, they begin to perceive more. And this can also, and this is the other part of this work that is very common in the beginning, lead to some of the things, some of the layers that are around our heart that kind of prevent us from connecting with and to come forward. And this can be a bit uncomfortable at times. So one of the common things, all right, now I'm talking sort of our end of doing energy work. One of the very common things is that that a person's energy, of course, without them knowing, without them being aware of it and even meaning to do so, but that a person's energy will, for example, try to attack us. Because we are sort of bypassing the ego's safety guards, all right? And that leads to an instantaneous protection or instantaneous defensiveness. So that's very common for us, to be actually viciously attacked by the people that we work with energetically.
But and you thought that you had a 9-to-5 job that wasn't good, you know, boss giving you, and you people you're working with, they're attacking you.
Yep, but we're not telling them this, because that would, of course, just cause guilt, you know. This is a normal thing, you understand that mechanism. Another thing is that, of course, and you mentioned this earlier, it's very difficult to communicate some of the things in this area, and that's sort of part of our expertise. You know, one part is to be able to see this. But another part is to be able to communicate that with the person, you know, and to really translate that, to transcode that. That's where the word transcodes comes from. To transcode that into a language that a person can actually begin to work with that. So some of the common things here besides shadow is definitely all the past related things that a person has not fully processed yet, because they often create these clouds, these layers around their hearts, why they had to shut down feeling themselves in the first place. And so it's very it's very moving to do this work, because we see people beginning to really making peace within. All right, and so I can't even tell you, what this inner work can do for people. And it's not, again, I want to emphasize this, it's not what I do, it's not what Jeff does. It's us facilitating the person's own self-corrective and self-healing abilities by facilitating them becoming able to connect with their inner source, with their inner higher power. So we are just like sort of we are the ushers, we greet them, we hold the room, we keep the room safe, and we give them that space to do this work. And so the real miraculous thing is are these spontaneous healings that can happen through just a person beginning to connect with their own heart.
Miss Yona Brindis, energy coach, energy healer, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. To learn more about Miss Yona Brindis, please go to our website at transcodes.com. Also, please feel free to go to our archives, type in Yona's name. You're going to find 4 or 5 shows of her and Jeff on. Fantastic. Really love having you. Miss Yona Brindis, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a real pleasure. Great honor.
Thank you, Ryan. It's such an honor for me to be here. So, yes. Thank you, everybody, for your time listening.
Joining us now is the Astrophenom, our astrologer, Ms. Constance Stellas. You can learn more about Ms. Constance Stellas, get your own chart done with Ms. Constance Stellas by going to her website at constancestellas.com. Ms. Stellas, what can you tell us about the chart of Ms. Yona Brindis?
Well, it's a powerful chart, first off. By power, I mean concentrated energy. And I would say unusual in the sense that she has a flexibility between business and healing. Sometimes those talents don't go together, but they do in her chart. She's a Pisces, which automatically puts her in the realm of dreams and energy sensitivities. Pisces is the last sign of the zodiac, and when someone incarnates into that sign of Pisces, sometimes they're almost finished their journey. By that I mean to not reincarnate again, but usually the challenge is to be connected to the earth and also the heavens or less tangible energies. So she is a natural channeler or transmuter of energy. So I don't know if she channels, but I think she does remote work, which in effect is sending energy over a physical distance. Now, her rising sign is Scorpio, and she also has Mars in Scorpio. So that's a tremendous energy position and transforming energy position. And she has been doing this for lifetimes, sometimes successfully, sometimes getting a little bit sticky. By that I mean into situations that perhaps she did not foresee. It happens to all of us. And the moon position of her chart is Aquarius, which is actually the new moon today is in Aquarius. That's kind of a cosmic coincidence. But that is a very fixed and forward, avant-garde emotional position. By that I mean she can easily understand and work with ideas that other people would say, "What? Are you kidding me?" And she does this very steadfastly. There's stubbornness in the chart, which is a good thing. So I bring it up because when you're involved with translating energies, transmuting energies, you have to keep your grounding and not swim around in other people's dimensions and problems and energetic situations. So that, I think, stands her in good stead. I think that her combination, because I read she was a chemist as well as a business person and now has is working in trans modes of energy healing, that's going to evolve. And that perhaps she will find most of her career being as a public speaker or as a person who is spreading light on topics and ways that we can heal that are not traditional. So she's coming up to big eclipse, actually, in February. So I'm not sure where she is in the globe, but she may be moving in the next year or so. And I think that this year will be very – you know what I think about this year? For her personally, it's going well. But she's in the vanguard of what a lot of people are calling, you know, expanding consciousness. And she has the fortitude – to help with these expansions on an individual level, on a group level, and just by being who she is. So I think we'll hear more from her in the future.
Excellent. And Ms. Stellis, do you feel that right now, if you're looking at her chart, that she has fulfilled most of her potential or the best days ahead of her?
Not by a long shot. The best days are ahead of her because she is becoming more tuned into this healing modalities rather than a let's say, a business or background was in sciences. And the world is keeping – well, the world is not keeping pace. The world should be keeping pace, but it is not. But she can help move herself and other people forward. I read that she's studying at University of Sedona. And, you know, Sedona in Arizona is known as a vortex of energy. So when you hang out there, your consciousness and mind expansion, soul, spirit, everything is expanding at warp speed. So she may want to take a break, you know, and I don't know, study cooking for a while. But you know, that's just a – but the potential for things moving very quickly for her definitely is there.
Ms. Constance Stellis, the astrophenom. That was a real great, thorough analysis. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And to learn more about Ms. Constance Stellis, get a reading done with Ms. Constance Stellis, please go to our website at constancestellis.com. Thank you so much, Ms. Stellis.
Sure, sure.
Joining us now is the queen of the universe, internationally respected psychic medium, Ms. Carrie O'Connor. You can learn more about Ms. Carrie O'Connor and get a reading done with Ms. Carrie O'Connor by going to her website at carrieoconnor.com. Ms. O'Connor, what can you tell us about the energy you felt? Ms. Yona Brindis.
I've had the pleasure of meeting Yona and Jeffrey Casper several times, and so it really is a pleasure. Yona has that warrior energy, and I loved listening to the interview, Ryan. I thought your questions were spot on, and I thought it was really interesting some key points that she said as far as that she, when she was younger, she'd have horrific dreams and fighting, slashing, seeing her, you know, decapitated or, you know, those kind of things. And just horrifying dreams, like the hell world, to the point where she was insomniac. And then after she understood, so she shut down. That's a lot of people's story, right? So her own story, I see as the somebody that's very, very strong. She's very tall physically, but energetically. She comes in with a sword up in the air, and that means to me as far as timing for her personally and for her and Jeff as far as the business from now and over the next 3 years, it's time for them to really cut through, let's say, a lot of red tape or cut through even duality, emotion and mind, create literally a hole through the matrix to help people cross the bridge so they could go beyond mind and emotion to get to that place of where I call the sacred heart. So she's a warrior for sure. And then just quickly say in the past life, for her to come from Iceland, from the energetic history of the Vikings and really having to look at, this is my energetic history. It's important for us to look at that, but not to live in it, because really our lesson, especially this lifetime, if not all lifetimes, is to be able to be in the now, you know, forgive ourselves, look at our shadow, all the messages that she and Jeff are sharing, give keys for people to break through the matrix. I literally see keys going out of their heart, and when I see the symbol of skeleton keys, that means the individual has the ability to go into the person's closet, skeleton closet, unconscious, subconscious patterns, unlock them, and as soon as they turn it, the energy turns into a bold key. And she said another key thing where they're the ushers. Her and Jeff are the, like, the midwives, the birthers, in that the person has to kind of put their energy into it and turn it. You just can't go to a healer and say, heal me. You hear it all the time. I hear it all the time, right? And sure, you could tune up a person, they could feel great, and they could go on, but the energy is self-regulating, self-directing, so they have to put their energy into it too. Like she just showed me before, that energy work is a handshake. You got to meet us. You got to put your energy into it, an extension. It's not, you know, praying on our knees, please, please come up and lift me up, you know? So she's got a strong message, and I didn't know that she had a science background. I knew Jeff did, but I didn't know Yona did too, so that's very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that when they speak, and they really do, I mean, they speak and they really provide a lot of background and backup for what their work is. I was wondering, Yona and I have talked about her previous and past lives, and did you have a sense that some of the work that she's doing right now could be to make up for a past life where maybe she killed a bunch of people? She's like, you know what, I whacked out a bunch of people, and what I'm doing is that I'm healing those people I whacked out.
Yes, yes. One in particular, what I call it, Ryan, is a lot of times I'll see what looks like a wave in a person's energy field, like this little, like a tidal wave kind of point. And that means to me that they come in with an energetic, I'm doing air quotes here, hangover. So I know that individual has come into this incarnation to in particularly heal that one, because it has to do with major life issues. And this is what I call right to life issues. And that does have to do with entitlement, worthiness, and all that kind of stuff. In the lifetime in particular that I see that she's here to work on, or that has that hangover energy, is where she was a male. There was a lot of that Viking kind of energy where they just would go into towns and just rob, rape, do, you know, they just took over, right? And that she was very good. She was a very good leader. She was very much thought that they were doing the right thing, you know, and she had a lot of power in that lifetime. And she gained a lot of power and gained a lot of land. I keep on seeing that movie on FX that's called Vikings. The guy's really cute. He's got beautiful blue eyes. And she looks kind of like him. And so that lifetime in particular is what she was dreaming about when she was little. I also thought it was fascinating that she shared, Ryan, that 13 to 18 years old, after she shut down, that she felt suicidal. And you hear that a lot with people that are very empathic and sensitive, that they go through a really severe depression or anxiety or suicidal period. And that when I was looking at her energy during that time in particular, when she was 13, 14, her right shoulder was up in the air, the left shoulder was down, almost like somebody with a stroke, right? And her left hand was like literally hanging down. So she wasn't taking in enough energy. And she had these, it looks like these blocks on her shoulders that hold a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, and what is my responsibility in this lifetime. So going back to the feminine goddess energy that has a sword up, she's here to help people cut through the ties, forgive themselves, and I think it's a good reminder for all of us. Well, we all have not had lifetimes where we were all floating on angels and we're saints, you know. We've had some lifetimes where we did not do the greatest things, and that's a hard thing for people to swallow, especially in the new age world where they don't want to hear about that. You know?
Yeah, they want to hear everything's so wonderful.
Oh, we're all special. There's no evil.
Exactly. Oh.
You wonder why you're nice? Because you killed people. That's what it is. You're
exactly. Maybe exactly. Nice person. You know, you were Hitler's right command. Oh, shit. You know, people do not like hearing that, but that is the beginning of the shadow work. That's where Stuart Weil would always talk about the whitey-tighties, where everything had to be white and clean and spiritual. And then he used to say, go and drink some wine and shake your energy up a bit. You know what I mean? That purist is just another form of duality, right? My way, highway, it's just in a different form. So I really love her energy. I miss her. I would really like to go down and see. We got to arrange a get-together, Ryan. We'll go down and see them, or they could come up and see us, or
That's right, and then you'll everyone else will know about it by watching the news, and they'll say, oh, so that's what happened this weekend.
The town sunk.
That's right. Ms. Kerry O'Connor, the queen of the universe and internationally respected psychic medium. You have to get a reading with Ms. O'Connor. Please, I implore you, to learn more about Ms. Kerry O'Connor, please go to her website at kerryoconnor.com. Ms. O'Connor, thank you so much for your time and for your analysis.
Thank you, Ryan. It's always my pleasure. Love
you. Okay, everyone. That concludes tonight's edition of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our incredible guest and energy healer, healing the world, Miss Yona Brindis. Special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Miss Kerry O'Connor, Miss Lisa Kaza, and Miss Constance Stellas. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, please go to our website at outerlimitsradio.com. So the next time we meet, my friends, wishing upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers. Take good care. Thank you so much for listening.